Oh God. Oh my God.
Speaking of hot and fresh, I kind of half expected you to show up with like a bag of chicken. Oh. I'm kind of sad.
Oh no, I had shepherd's pie for dinner tonight.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah,
ooh.
I went to Costco today, so it was a very low effort evening.
Still sounds good.
Yeah.
Oh man, I feel like kind of melancholy about this episode for some reason. I think because we're, you know, it's episode 29 of season 2,
mm-hmm.
and there are only 31 episodes, so. We're almost there.
Then we never have to speak to each other again.
Yeah. I mean, that part rules, but I'm also kind of sad about it.
After 31 episodes, we get to speak to each other. We don't have to.
Yeah, it's true. We can opt in or out.
I don't know. He's still got so many movies we haven't touched, and he's going to make so many more.
Plus, you know, G-Force 2, G-Force 3.
Three-Force?
Because, you know, the mole is going to be a recurring character in all of them.
Of course. Absolutely. Well, Speckles didn't like die. They didn't throw him in a fucking volcano.
He was serving time. Like, what was he doing at the end? Was he making license plates?
Did they all say nodes?
Nudes.
This was a bit of a cram session for me this time. I just got back from a trip and had to speed run the two movies last night and tonight, and literally fast forwarded some of it. Yeah. As is my general design. And I gotta say, the oh man, the club scene at the end of Vampire's Kiss, like the last like 20 minutes of it, that music sped up. I went back and I listened to it slow because I was like, what does this even sound like? And I realized that I think 3 out of 4 times that I've watched this movie, I've watched it at least 1.5 speed.
Yeah,
I can't imagine. Yeah. I can't imagine either of these movies Benny Hill'd.
Oh, they're pretty good.
That just seems like such an insane way to like experience either of these films.
Welcome to my brain, Sean.
Yeah. I'm glad I don't have kids. I can watch movies at normal speed,
normal volume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normal boobs, just out and about. Both films, good boobs.
At one point, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Leaving Las Vegas. Cora like looked over my shoulder at the computer and she was like, I want to see dancing nipples again.
Yeah, the other day when she was just staring at me and saying boobies, 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 I was like, yeah. What the fuck is happening here?
There are some great things about having kids. Yeah. Man, we went to Thunderdome today and it was fucking wild. It's the craziest I've seen it in there. Damn. Like, kids were just crawling on the kegs and like falling all over the place. Like, Barrett got kicked in the head at one point, but was like, whatever.
I'll still never get over the time that Matt's kid got bit in the middle of the back. Just like, how do you bite a child in the middle of the back and leave like teeth imprints? That's a good bite. Yeah,
that's a
on
good
a
bite.
Flat surface.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody with a little mouth.
I had a kid bite me on the arm once at a Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
How old were you?
Too
old. I was an appropriate age to be at a Chuck E. Cheese. I will answer no further questions.
Fair enough.
I don't think there's an inappropriate age to be at a Chuck E. Cheese. I took my high school prom date.
Does Chuck E. Cheese still exist?
Yeah, it still exists.
They went out of business for a little bit. I think they had a bankruptcy issue and then somebody bought them up again and relaunched it because then Chuck E. Cheese was like, cool Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, yeah. And now he's like backwards hat, like skateboard Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, he's like what people thought cool was supposed to be in 1996.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're staying behind the curve.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, 1996 is probably fucking cool again. So maybe they're ahead.
Well, what was big in 1996? Don't Google it. I'm going to Google it. You guess.
I bet ER was a cool show still.
Probably. Yeah, ER was probably hot.
I want you to try and finish this thought that Google has given me. In 1996, popular culture included...
Gargoyles.
Ooh.
Probably.
That might be one. Yeah.
According to Google AI, in 1996, popular culture included movies, music, TV shows, and news stories.
Really?
Wow.
God, AI is fucking so smart.
The English Patient was big.
Mm.
Lame.
The Macarena, that was a big one.
Fuck yeah. Okay.
ER was definitely still big.
Nice. You nailed it.
ER was dominant for a long time in the 90s, though.
Seinfeld, Friends, and Suddenly Susan.
I forgot about that one.
What the fuck was Suddenly Susan? The name sounds familiar.
It's just a show about Susan Sarandon.
Oh,
Beanie Babies. Beanie Babies were a thing.
Okay.
Past guest Brian Kim McCormick sold Beanie Babies for like big time profit for a while.
I vaguely remember him talking about that.
Yeah. The average price of gas was $1.23 a gallon.
Mm.
What a ripoff.
I know. My dad still would have driven many miles to go get the $1.21.
Slang words of choice included booyah, word, psych, and fly.
Fuck yeah. Psych.
Yeah, I feel like that was a turning point in terms of like paying attention to what the news was saying about dumb fucking social shit. And then we got like the internet and it just became that forever faster.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we still had Bill Clinton as president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was one.
Yeah.
When did the Monica Lewinsky thing happen?
Pre-beege.
Pre-beeging. Or at least pre-perjury.
Also, in 1996, the movie The Rock came out. That's right. Mm. This is a Nicolas Cage podcast.
Boom. Bring it home, Sean.
Welcome back to Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your host, Sean, here with my co-host.
Nick. Sorry. I'm Nick.
I finally get it. I finally get it. And you fuck it up. God damn it.
We'll fix it in post. I've got him saying Nick so many times.
And our producer.
Jick. I'm Jick.
God damn it. And our producer.
Peter.
Hello.
And this is Cage Match. I said that. We're almost done with this thing. I can soon stop pretending like I care.
I think everyone knows. Yeah, we're going on 3 solid years of this.
It's a lot of time spent with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I really know the man at this point, which is kind of crazy. Is that Stockholm syndrome? Kind of.
I was here from the word jujitsu. I was in. I was sold. Episode 1.
Oh, God, jujitsu. That was, you know, as a exercise in this process, I really felt like we made a bad choice. I was like, I don't think I can do this thing.
And then episode 2, Army of One.
And then it all came together.
Yep.
And then we all came together.
Yeah. In Hayden's room. The only time that's ever happened.
Well, what are you guys drawn to right now between the two movies?
Let's get on with, well, I just watched Wild at Heart this morning, so
you want to kick it off?
All right. I am always just like thrilled with how this movie opens with just the fire and then the title like slamming into place, like with airplane noises as it comes in, like as if this was going to be one of the big action films. It kills me. And then you just get like that intro with like, I think it's like some rock and roll. And no, and I'm still talking even about the fire. The
credits, yeah.
Still just the fire over everything. It sets a tone for the film for sure.
It does.
Yeah. I love the David Lynchiness of it all. Every just like weird pause or motion. Like sometimes somebody just walks kind of funny and I'm like, that's so David Lynch.
I think that's my big thing with this movie is that like, I don't think I like David Lynch. So every that's once in a while,
very fair opinion.
I mean, I watch these and I'm just like, I think he would be better for me in like a long, slow procedural, like Twin Peaks. If I really gave it another go, I think I would really enjoy it more. And we talked about it with Tank a little bit too, yeah, where it's like, I really feel like I want more backstory. And I know like who gives a shit about Mr. Reindeer, whatever. It doesn't matter. But like all these characters, all this random shit that comes up in a David Lynch movie, like the fast talking guy talking about pigeons spreading diseases.
Uh-huh.
Like, what the fuck is that about? It doesn't matter. David Lynch. Yeah, you know?
It's just the world you're in now.
But in like a 90, whatever it is, 100 minute movie, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
This one is a lot.
Is 140 minutes.
Oh shit. Okay.
It's a long boy.
That's a long boy. So, yeah.
I've never been the biggest Lynch fan. I love this movie. Like, I'm glad we saw this movie in the theater. I'm glad we had that option. Peter, you and I have had this conversation about, like, sometimes it's good to see a movie in a place where you just have to engage with it.
Totally.
We went and saw Green Knight right after the pandemic. That was like our first theater experience. And we both walked, and Rachel, the three of us walked out of that movie. And I think the consensus was, I don't think I liked it, but I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah, exactly. I feel happy that I did that with people, but also, what?
Yeah, nice. But and I said, like, if I had had the option to watch that at home, I would have been on my phone the whole time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I'm glad I was able to engage with this film for the first time in a theater with people, because I really do enjoy it, and I don't think I'd enjoy it as much if I didn't have that. If I wasn't, like, locked in, if I wasn't committed.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really great experience. And yeah. I'm glad that Sif was putting on that David Lynch.
Absolutely.
Evening.
I know. I'm kind of sad that I missed out on that, because I think that would have made a big difference for me in that sort of, like, shared experience kind of aspect. Because I think I have not watched Wild at Heart with anybody this entire time. It's always just been me watching by myself. And I think that I would enjoy it more with someone else, even if it's just going, like, what?
Yeah. Well, having somebody else to point out things that are just nonsense and ridiculous is pretty, I'd say, important when watching a David Lynch film.
Yeah.
I just watched Mulholland Drive the other day for the first time. And
what did you think? How did you enjoy the lesbian love scene? Did you watch it with your parents? Because that's how it's designed.
No, they couldn't make it up, but I took photos and I sent them to my dad.
Of the scene or of you watching the scene?
Both. <Yeah. laughs> I was really close to the scene. I thought it was, you know, good. I definitely didn't understand it when it made the change. And I was like, okay, hold on. And then I had to, like, watch it twice as hard. And then I had to Google it.
Yeah, I don't really love a movie that I have to then, like, look up the deep wiki on.
Yeah, it was so much. I was like, what the fuck just happened?
Okay, so what are the tiny people? What about the trash guy?
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Is this a Dark Souls podcast now?
Yes. Always has been.
But I enjoy this film. It's just so weird. It does get slow. It gets so slow because it feels like it's just two different stories stitched together to make a film length. Them getting away from jail and, like, breaking parole feels like one story. And then, like, everything from Big Tuna feels like a whole nother story.
Totally. But I really like Big Tuna.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in Big Tuna. It's just like a reset. Where you have a whole new influx of characters brought in.
It does kind of have that stage setup where, like, there is kind of a halfway point that is where you go out and get drinks from the
intermission.
And then you come back and it's like,
let's all go to the lobby.
And then you come back and then, yeah, they're in a new place. There's a new antagonist in it. Kind of, yeah, it is its own, like, separate thing in a lot of ways.
Teeth get smaller, you know. Teeth get smaller, hogs get bigger.
Yeah,
that's how it goes with Willem Dafoe.
Ladies just horny, just asking for it.
Oh my god, Bobby Peru is
so disgusting.
Definitely my favorite character and so repulsive.
I was talking to someone recently about Dafoe's hog.
His troubling hog.
Was it somebody on the Max? Because you shouldn't just be approaching people on the Max to talk about Willem Dafoe's Wang.
I mean, that seems like the ample place to have that conversation.
It's an ample Wang.
You've seen where I lived.
It's kind of interesting because Wild at Heart, I mean, it's hard to say that anything had a easy or tough path. Because if you're a great movie, you're a great movie. You're going to fucking slam through it. But it did have kind of an easy path given the stuff it went up against, which was knowing Willy's Wonderland and Wicker Man. Which, like, all of those are great for dumb fucking reasons, but, you know, it's not like a murderer's row of great movies that it fucking slayed to get here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Willy's Wonderland, I think of those three, I have the most actual fondness for looking back on. Like, Wicker Man, I think, is great for some really specific, stupid moments, but, like, that movie sucks.
Yeah, it's not a movie that bad. I enjoy watching. There are scenes from it that I enjoy engaging with. But
and knowing just gets weird. Like, great disaster porn. You get the Inuit porn.
Clapped, but that's about it.
That's not knowing.
Isn't it?
No. Knowing is the one where... That's the airplane one, right?
He sees the future through math.
Yeah.
God, I hated that one. Yeah, never mind. I thought we at least got one good thing from that.
God, what's that one now? The one where...
with the Inuit...
Between worlds.
Yeah.
We're
reading from Nicolas Cage's
poetry book
or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Knowing was really shitty.
Yeah.
That was another Daryl one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good job, Daryl. Because Daryl was on for Wicker Man, too.
Yeah. But I did like Willy's Wonderland. That was definitely a fine film. The crazier the pinball dance gets, the better.
True. With all the sparkles. Do you think he was just left
alone? Do you think Nick Cage was just left alone in a room with cameras and they were just like, we'll be back in 20 minutes?
Do you mean he was left behind?
I meant for the pinball scenes.
I understood. So, Wild at Heart, the David Lynch of it all is kind of the entire fucking thing, right? Like, I cannot imagine a different director doing this movie.
Be so much straighter, like
it would just be a pulp novel story,
yeah,
because that's really all these were. They were shorts, like, well, not shorts, but like, you know, little novellas,
yeah,
little pulp gas station stories,
mm-hmm. which I still think I would enjoy more.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah, just like little quick 30-minute films or whatever. That's episodes.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I mean. There's stuff like the Elvis stuff that just doesn't hit for me.
Oh, I love the Elvis stuff.
Okay, convince me.
I don't know, man. Nicolas Cage just goes so hard on singing these Elvis songs. And I mean, for Nicolas Cage, that's pretty fucking great.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that. It is. It's
he also
so
does that
weird.
Sick backflip out of the car.
Yeah, that scene's great. Just pulling over. I can't do this anymore. You find me some music on that radio. I love that Power Mat is just always on or somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
Like, that is the band of
middle
the
middle of fucking
world.
Big Tuna area, and it's just Power Mat.
Yeah. A band that never got like any real popularity, even in the 80s. But yeah, like, I don't know. There's just something about those Elvis scenes that are also just like, I don't know, like a world setting for me. The whole, like, you guys have a real E energy, like big E energy. Tell me if you know this one. And then just like starts it. And then they just go with it. It's yep. like, fuck yeah, of course they know that.
Well, like there's.
And have practiced it.
Yeah.
There are times where I'm like, this movie needs to pick a lane. Is it like a gritty crime drama or is it magical realism? Like, where are we with this?
Well, I think with Lynch, that's exactly the fucking middle of the road that he hits, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is always kind of that, like, crazy magic world, but yeah. also, like, crime drama, you know, like,
but this one
kind of
is and isn't. Like, it's, I feel like it needs to just go slightly harder either direction.
Yeah, I mean, like, all the Wizard of Oz shit doesn't really do much to light my candle, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, those are weird additions for me, too, but
they don't.
Whatever.
It doesn't really fit, and it's really just there so we can have the fucking Glinda scene at the end. So, like, we can have a Deus Ex Machina poorly acting tell him, you know, to, like, go get the girl.
But it also gives us that Diane Ladd, like, evaporating photo at the end.
Pretty yeah. tight.
Which is yeah. pretty hilarious and good.
Yeah, I do like that
the
one.
Way they just kind of hit these mediocre references all the way through and then just end it with her photo evaporates because it got wet.
That is pretty good. Yeah. I do like that. I mean, I fucking love the performances in this. I think every weirdo character in the entire thing is still putting in a great job. It's like
I always just love I just die when that old guy is vacuuming at the hotel, he takes those steps and then like going backwards, he takes little old man steps backwards.
Very Lynch.
Yeah, the background characters are terrifically handled. Everything from vacuuming guy to the porn stars
to the guy at the gas station like snapping off the beat.
Yeah,
you know,
just the world building of the entire of Lynch's mind. I mean, that's the part I might not like the structure of the films, but I definitely love like the worlds they inhabit because they are fairly well realized.
Yeah, there's a pretty good vision for what he wants. And it's pretty consistent, I feel, with his other films, too.
Yeah.
What year did this come out again?
Oh, 1990.
God, Harry Dean Stanton just like fucking always looking fucking so old.
That dude has looked the same for so long. I mean, he's dead now, right?
Yeah, he died not that long ago.
But. Yeah. But yeah, he looked
44. So what? He was 56 in this film? 46? 56.
56.
No, 90. 46.
46. Ooh, he looks like a bad 46.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
I mean, like shit.
Who said on this podcast, like, well, we used to be able to smoke inside. People used to smoke inside. That was Nick.
Well, yeah, smoking inside was awesome.
I also made everyone look like dog shit all the time.
Yeah. Dog shit and cool.
Well, sorry. Excuse me.
Like cool dog shit.
Like a turd with a cigarette.
A turd that you would definitely take home to meet your mama.
Absolutely.
I look back at my like at being a child and I think about all of the stuffed animals that my parents definitely bought me with like points from cigarettes.
Mm.
Like I had several Joe Camel plush toys.
See, that's just good parenting.
Yeah.
It's not like taking your kid down to a fucking baby fight club, letting them bite on other kids and generally displease. Yeah, bite him in the back. Maybe like right on a cheek. Dealer's choice.
I bit my brother on the cheek in a library when I was like sub 1 years old.
Nice.
Really chomped him. And my brother went over to my mom and was like, Peter bit me. And she was like, okay, whatever. And she looked and it was just like a full dental definition on his cheek. I got that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Kind of it for Wild at Heart, right?
Yeah, those are my favorite things about it is just the world that he creates, the characters. And I don't know, it's just Nicolas Cage looks so cool in that snakeskin jacket. Undeniable. He's got crazy good chemistry with Laura Dern throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the performances are great. They're weird, which is what we're here for.
Yep.
I thoroughly enjoy the movie. It gets a little slow, but it feels the length.
I don't know that I have much more to add to this conversation. Nothing that I haven't said before. Like, it's a good film.
So I realized where I fucked up earlier. Vampire's Kiss took out Between Worlds.
Mm.
So Nick Cage poetry still in play for this episode.
Good.
Yeah. It took out Between Worlds, Color Out of Space, and Mandy.
Yeah. This one had probably, like, Vampire's Kiss probably had the hardest track
of any of these movies, I think.
Yeah. It was just all bangers all the way through.
Right. I mean, like, Between Worlds is the weakest of those, but also, like,
it's so fucking pretty weird, wild, too, though. Yeah. Like, remember
it fits in this bracket so much.
That one was such a fun one to talk about. Like, that one from the word go was so just fucking out there that I'm like, we're going to have fun with this.
Yeah.
Well, that was, you know, relatively early on in us having guests. That was Gary and Rox, you know, and like they go hard. So like they knew their shit with that movie and it was a lot of fun to talk about.
Do you remember them? The sex in the bathroom or whatever it was. And then he's like choking her out after they sex so that she can see her kid or whatever.
Yeah.
What a fucking like
that movie's wild.
Can you imagine meeting up with somebody and they're like, I love to fuck. And it's like, yes. And they're like, I can see the dead, but only when I'm like halfway dead.
Really like, right edging on that line of death and life.
Yeah.
That's how fucking David Carradine died. You shouldn't do that.
I think a lot of people have died riding that line, but yeah.
I just like mentioning David Carradine. Also the guy from NXS.
Tell me more people who have auto asphyxiated themselves.
I mean, those are the two I know. I think Chris Cornell just hugged himself. I don't think that was a sex thing.
Mm. Same with Bourdain.
Yeah.
No, I'm sad. Let's talk about edging again.
That's so good.
Yeah, it's great. Keep riding that wave. No, this movie, man, like the second I put it on and the like dumb music comes on, I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Vampire's Kiss brings me so much joy. I love the visuals of the film. And going back to, you know, our conversation with Gary and Rox, what Gary said about like just those shots, those establishing shots in the credits, yeah, of all the traffic coming in and out and yeah. kind of like pulsing like blood in the veins. Yeah, of
arterial flow.
Yeah. Yeah. It hits really good. It's the subtlest part. Is that even subtle? I don't know if it's subtle, but
I don't know that anything in this movie is subtle. Had he not said that, though, I don't know that I would have paid attention to that being sort of like a blood flowing kind of concept, but it right. really is there.
Like the more I watch it, the less I'm like, the more and more I know when we started this process, I was very much just like, no, that's like, I don't know why people think this movie's so crazy. Like it's the acting's crazy, but like, it's a pretty simple plot. And the more and more I watch it, the more I'm kind of like going down like the rabbit hole of like, wait, what is real? What is reality?
Yeah. You try to pick it apart and it's like, when does the psychiatrist become a figment of his imagination?
Right. Yeah.
Why would he ever not go on those dates with Jackie? Like,
I know
Jackie was hot.
She was great.
Yeah.
It's just because he's in the thrall.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I think the weakest point of this entire movie is Jennifer Beals as the like vampiress.
As Rachel.
Yeah. She just is like kind of nothing. And like, you can tell that they don't have chemistry.
Yeah. She is not like sultry or yeah. like, I don't know.
Yeah, like her just writhing on top of him is not hot.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that kind of works
him
for
fucking
me,
around
though.
With Jackie. Him fucking I mean, around that, with Jackie was hotter, but yeah, sorry.
But like that kind of works for me in terms of like this character, because like it's a figment of his imagination and he clearly isn't that into himself. So like
true.
Even the people he imagines are like not that into them or like they're bad at it. Yeah. I mean, they clearly don't have chemistry. That is true. Like that is part of the problem with that performance, but that lack of chemistry kind of works for that character in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, he had more chemistry with the imaginary girl at the very end of the film too.
Especially when she's not there and he's just like yelling at the wall.
Yeah. Oh boy.
I love the fucking when he finally just fucking snaps and he's just like disheveled, like shuffling down the street with a bit of a palette.
The palette. When he snaps those plastic teeth in and then just crawls away.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, I think what this movie does for me is no matter how many times I've seen it, there's going to be performance moments that will just surprise me every time.
Yeah, like, I always forget about the crawling away until he does it.
And the like frantic way he catches that like stink bug to eat it.
Oh, yeah.
And
the drugged pigeon he has to catch.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, okay, because this movie was shot without a union crew, without like proper, like through the proper channels, like how much of that, again, it's how much of that is just like, just let Nick Cage loose in a park. Like how much of this are we just not getting multiple like takes of, or is this just a no note situation?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of that like world of guerrilla filmmaking, but it didn't have that background. You know, it just was like kind of low budget. So we were like, I don't know, do this in off hours, just run down the street and be crazy. And I was like, I love that shit. And like, what a perfect character actor to pull into that in that moment, too. It's like he is the ideal, like, just do your thing, dude. Like,
yeah,
give us what you got. Like, I cannot imagine that director being like, oh, Nick, that's a little too much. You know,
I don't think anybody ever dialed it back down.
Yeah.
they might be like, hey, that was pretty good. Explore that a little bit. What more can you give me?
What if you crawled off screen like a dog?
Yeah.
No, that was definitely Nick Cage taking some liberties in the moment, I have to imagine.
He's so fucking over the top in this movie, and I love it so much. It's like touching the mirror. Oh, Christ.
Oh, yeah. The way it like burns him when he touches the mirror.
Like, and this goes to like, I mean, I've probably been saying this, I probably said this a million times at this point, but like, it always goes to people think like Nick Cage is such a bad actor for performances like this. I'm like, no, these are choices. And these are amazing choices.
Yeah.
Like, if he were a bad actor, like, if he were the bad actor everyone thinks he is, every performance would be this.
Right.
True.
Or he never could have achieved this. Like, I don't think Kevin Sorbo has it in him to do this.
I cannot imagine Sorbo in a movie like this.
Just Kevin Sorbo does Frankenstein's monster, but he does it in the most wild Nicolas Cage performance ever.
Oh, God.
How much do you think we can get Sorbo for?
How much do we think we could get Sorbo? Do you want him to come to the double feature?
All we have to do is tell him that he can talk all sorts of alt-right nonsense.
Yeah.
And he'd probably show up. But we'll give him a microphone.
I wouldn't mind platforming him so we can just like fucking rotten egg him.
Yeah.
At what age does that happen to the human brain?
A Sorbofication?
Yeah. Dean Cain went through it too. Dean Cain went fucking hard. When does this happen to the human brain?
Well, I think you have to be bit by a vampire bat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to be a little bit drunk.
A little bit horny. I was also pretty horny.
Yes, that's what happened. I was a little bit drunk. A little bit horny.
The accent, his accent in this movie, it's one of the better Nicolas Cage accents.
It's so good.
And that he maintains it.
Yeah. Now, Alva, what's your favorite, like...
This movie fucking rules.
I know. What part of Alva... God, there's so much Alva that we just haven't even talked about yet. Do I like the mescaline admission more, or like the fact that she's just ironing clothes in front of a window with no drapes and or with the blinds open? And he comes with like a little packet of soup mix.
I know, just like waving it around like it's drugs.
She's technically in a bra, but it's like huge. It's like, you know.
Well, they were different times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoulder pads were big in the NFL and bras were really weird and pointy.
Man, Alva's shoulder pads in the beginning of this film, just enormous. That's where you get the David Byrne confusion again.
Yeah.
Like, is this David Byrne? I'm not so sure anymore.
I think my two favorite moments with him for sure are the too late, too late, too late. That's just like terrifying monster, but also hilarious at the same time. And then just him slowly like being pulled from the dead, just shouting her name and then running out and leaping onto her desk. Like,
there you
incredible.
Are.
Incredible. I mean, it's that so fucking, good.
That standing jump, that box jump is impressive.
Even if you take like the athleticism out of this entire thing, it's like, just imagine being in an office space and you hear that from like three doors down. You're just like, oh God. Oh, and my fucking that, like, boss. I got to go in there and talk to him. And it's like, oh no.
But he's like, he's a middle manager, right?
He's like nothing.
Yeah.
And like, he just gets away with all of that.
Yeah. Running around in the women's restroom.
Yeah.
Like the screaming and shouting all the time.
Nobody takes her seriously until it's too late, which I mean, that's fucking. That's real. I don't know why that I keep getting hung up on that, as if that's not a fucking real thing in this world.
Yeah.
His speech about like how he would like no matter what, he would always give her the shittiest job.
Oof. That's a brutal one.
He just cuts it right there.
Not an Alva scene, but just like my favorite just Nick Cage part scene. Just his weird inflections is when like he's freaking out and he's like going into his office, like, tell him I'm in a meeting.
Yeah. Oh man. No, Peter Lowe is just what a like wild character.
I mean, it is definitely one of like the most standout Nicolas Cage characters.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked about like the memification of him and everything. It's like so many of them are from this movie, and like it's just such like a wild, interesting, good, bad performance. I don't know. It's very hard to put your finger on it, because like you could look at it and be like, this is so over the top. Mm-hmm. But then you can also think about like when we were talking to Lauren and she was saying like, you know, this is being opera-ish, you know, it's these old timey black and white movies where everything has to be so big because of what you're producing and presenting.
Yeah.
You know, and he's doing that, and he's channeling something different in a weird way, but like it fucking works.
Yeah, it's a modern Nosferatu.
Yeah.
And I do love that arc of he loves those movies and that era of filmmaking so much, and how from, as we've tracked his career from like Peggy Sue Got Married and like the Murder Fingers to this, to him eventually just playing fucking Dracula.
Yeah.
Oh, Renfield was so fun.
That is a fun one.
I could just talk about this movie forever, and just, I like,
I know it almost feels like it's something I want to watch again tonight, and it's like, oh, I don't have time. I'd probably put it on my iPad and watch it while I drive to Portland tomorrow morning.
Like, this is definitely one that has grown with me as I've watched this. Like, my first view, like the first time through the bracket, like I was viewing everything trying to, you know, from a critical lens, because, you know, how I interacted with art. But like, as we've gotten through it more and more, and now we're just watching the movies we like, and I can just watch these films, I'm like, God, this movie just is so good. Because like the first time I watched it, I was kind of like, this is bad, but I'm enjoying it. Now I'm just like, no, this is fucking genius.
Yeah, I mean, it is still kind of bad. Like, it's still campy, it's still stupid.
Yeah.
But like overall, I think like it's not the most well-directed movie. It's not the best music. It's not the perfect cinematography, but like it's fucking great.
Yeah, all the elements come together and make quite the cosmic gumbo.
Yeah, well put.
I think if it were a bad film, if it were truly just a bad film, you wouldn't have the little like touches, like when he bites the woman, when he kills the woman in the club, him like the little scene of him like sneaking the teeth back into his mouth. Like, you wouldn't have had those little touches where clearly someone was paying attention.
Okay, those teeth. Like, I haven't put one of those in my mouth in a really long time. Dude, does it really like extend your face as much as it seems to do to him? Like,
yeah. Well, it is just all plastic right up front. So you wouldn't like, you can't close your mouth all the way. It's always like kind of open a bit.
Yeah.
And they definitely don't go all the way back.
Yeah. I also didn't notice the first couple times that she was just like absolutely doing coke in that back room.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Now I get it.
One of the random shit vending machines at a bar here in Portland had one of those one night, and I was trying to like buy myself a $2 pair of those plastic teeth, and the machine just took my money, and I wasn't going to spend another $2 on that bit.
Yeah.
If I see it again, I'll try.
Good call.
All right. So what do you guys want to set in stone for this one? Who's the winner?
I think it's got to be Vampire's Kiss. Like, clearly we're all much more like just enthused by that film.
Yeah, it gets the people going, man. It's a good film. I mean, it's a great film.
By my own metric, in terms of like how I've been handling this round, what's the one I can recommend to anyone? Vampire's Kiss. I can't recommend a Lynch film to Justin.
Yeah, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
Go look at Bobby Peru's teeth.
I feel like, I think both of these films like come with a fairly decent sized caveat in terms of like who I could recommend this to, or if I recommend it, I'm like, okay, just stick with it, you'll get it, you'll get there. Like, this isn't a set it and forget it movie. Like, I think there's going to be a little preamble to getting anyone invested in any of these movies if they're not already like into the idea.
Yeah, I think it's just more consistent throughout its run that it is just always going to be giving you something to really like sink your teeth
down on.
Yeah. Nice. Well done, both of you.
Yeah. Yours was better.
But yeah, Vampire's Kiss, man. It's a fucking banger, dude.
Yeah, I'm glad this isn't a tiebreaker situation and contentious, because it's 100% Vampire's Kiss for me. Love Wild at Heart, love the stupid snakeskin jacket and all that shit, but like, Vampire's Kiss rules. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. Welcome to the final foreskin, Peter Lowe.
Yes.
God, Pig versus Vampire's Kiss. That's a matchup.
It will make no sense at all in a head-to-head kind of concept, but still great.
Con Air versus Raising Arizona.
It's going to be interesting. We did a weird thing.
That means there's only like 3 official episodes left.
Yeah, I said that earlier.
Weird.
Yep, this whole experiment's been wild at heart and weird on top. And
weird on top. Oh, thanks, Lula. Also, thanks to our Patreon supporters, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our Cage Dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron.
If Peter missed your name, let us know. He'll say it twice next week.
Did you say Bill? Yes.
Bill.
You said Bill.
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 Bill. Bill. Bill.
Bill. Bill.
Bye. Bye.
Nick, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Are you watching Burn Notice, or is this just a Josie thing?
Just Josie.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Josie's watching Burn Notice?
Josie just put on Burn Notice. Why did she, like, text you about it?
Yeah, she texted me about it. She's like, I see why you like the show. And then we talked about, like, nice things about Burn Notice.
No, I've been in the room for, like, parts of episodes, but I'm not watching it.
Yeah. I don't doubt you that Burn Notice is fine. I don't have time.
Yeah, I'm not pulling up like a serialized show from 30 years ago or whatever the fuck came out.
Because I could get in on that. I have opinions on Dark Souls. Ooh, I just started a new Elden Ring playthrough this morning. Let me tell you about it.
Okay.
No. Yeah, mute Sean. The signal canceled. Fuck.
We've got enough Sean audio. We'll stitch something in.
It'll be fine. Yeah, don't worry about it.
It'll just be slurs. All the slurs we've recorded over the years. Sean, no, don't say that.